Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's the Round Ball Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, Kenny Satterfield, Shamond Williams, Joey Devine, Junior Harrington, John Crotty, Sean Keane, Predrag Savovich, musical guest Fleetwood Mac, and now the temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine.
Hi, it's me, Joey Devine, your temporary host of Round Ball Rock. I am here with my very good friend Sean Keane. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. Doing great. Feeling good about basketball. Feeling good about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees.
They came out today.
5 a.m., baby. It's like the Oscars, except for...
no one.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is not a Hall of Fame for anyone. I mean, for the city of Cleveland, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, city of Cleveland. It rocks. I don't know if you know that.
That's a really good point. Except Drew Carey.
The induction ceremony is at the Barclays Center this year, not in Cleveland.
Oh, right. Hasn't it been for a while? Why don't
they switch off between Cleveland and the Barclays Center for some reason?
That's very odd. And Do they do it at Quicken Loans Arena normally?
I don't know where they do it in Cleveland. I don't know that much about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Uh-huh.
But you have been on a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame podcast 3 times now.
3 times, yeah. It's a good podcast. Listen to it. It's our friend Joe Quazzala's podcast with our other friend Kristen Studdard, and it is called Who Cares About the Rock Hall? Let's talk about the news.
This is Round Ball Rock News. Basketball news. For humans and robots. Trust the process.
Our top story is J.R. Smith this week. Did a lot of hilarious J.R. Smith things. Children's book author J.R. Smith had an altercation with Aaron Baines during a preseason game that turned into an altercation with Marcus Smart. Smith got fined $15,000 for pushing Baines. Smart got fined $25,000 for essentially fighting his own team, trying to fake fight J.R. Smith.
Yeah, I mean, he did hit J.R. Smith in the back of the head, which is like what he got his fine for. I think maybe that's what the $10,000 extra dollars is for hitting somebody in the head.
But he also got dragged into the stands by his own players.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, Jason Tatum wrestled him to the ground like maybe like a 24 or 25 year old would have done it. And so that's very impressive that at the age of 20, he was able to handle Marcus Smart like that. And the reason this incident started was that Aaron Baines did the Kelly Olynyk arm lock move that knocked Kevin Love out of the playoffs in 2015.
Yeah.
And that's why J.R. Smith pushed him. Mm-hmm. So apparently that's in the teachings of Brad Stevens. Like, that's the only thing you can conclude. Or just that white big men are a menace.
Are the teachings of Stevens the exact opposite of the teachings of Peaches?
I think that's right, right?
Right.
Yeah, because he's like, no thanks, get those titties away from me.
Yeah, he is not. He's like, I will do anything to get the pain away except fuck.
Yeah, I will run on a treadmill to get the pain away. Ice the pain away.
So JR spent the whole time with Marcus Smart being restrained by his entire team, laughing in Marcus Smart's face.
Yes.
And then he made a chatterbox motion with his hands.
I wouldn't have known how to describe it, but that's how the Associated Press said it. So I'm like, all right, that's official. It's a AP Cell Guide. That is the chatterbox motion. That's what that's known as when you make your hands look like they're talking and no one's listening.
So last year, Marcus Smart was out for a lot of the year because he punched a picture in his hotel room.
Yeah, it was a photo of Isaiah Thomas.
How amazing would it have been if he hurt himself being restrained trying to fight J.R. Smith?
I mean, are we sure he didn't?
It's a fair point.
Yeah, it would be the greatest.
I mean, we don't root for people to get hurt, obviously, but it would be a hilarious injury.
Well, if Jason Tatum injured him, it would be hilarious. Especially him involving himself in a fight that he was not a part of, and also probably actually wanted no part of, I'm going to say. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm sure it's going to make Boston fans love him even more and pronounce the R in both his names even less.
Yeah. Mark is never happy. Mark is never happy. But Mark is never happy. That's their chant for him now. So after the game, Marcus Smart told reporters, "All that on the court, we can handle that off the court. I ain't with that. That's on my mama. May she rest in peace. Ain't no punk right here." Then J.R. Smith tweeted, "You big mad angry face," and then 5 crying laughing emojis. And then said, "Meet me on street, damn the back." So my question for you, Sean, is would these guys actually fight?
I think the answer is no. But if you're picking one of those guys who's going to fight you on the street, obviously J.R. Smith is likely to do that. Probably the most willing, I feel like, street fighter.
Oh, no, James Johnson's the most willing street fighter.
No, he can't because his hands are classified as deadly weapons.
Oh, he's the most willing cage fighter.
Yeah.
My mistake.
But I think we're not dealing with, like, a Serge Ibaka situation. Like, I could see J.R. Smith fighting a guy on, like at a loading dock. You know what I mean? Like, they could have fought, though.
I actually think this is two guys who would actually fight each other.
I mean, there are two guys who have definitely have fought before.
I mean, Marcus Smart basically fought a fan in college.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
So my question for you, Sean, it's not on the list. This is a surprise question, but I came up with it before we went. Is if these guys were street fighters, what would their special moves be?
Well, JR would clearly have, like, he'd be able to generate a pipe.
Right.
You know what I mean? He'd be like, you're going to get the pipe, and then it's a pipe upside their head. Marcus Smart,
a backwards Hadouken would be like, he'd blow, like, weed smoke.
Oh, that would be good. And it doesn't like knock you out. You're just very dazed and content. Yeah. And then he like beats the shit out of you.
Yeah,
I can see that too. Or he loads you into the passenger seat of his car.
Well, that's his fatality, and then clearly.
Yeah. He drinks Cavassier and then runs a stop sign. Mm-hmm. And then you're murdered.
Oh, he also does that air guitar thing. And a music note comes out. Like a fireball. Remember his air guitar celebration in New York?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. as for Marcus Smart, I think his fatality, for sure, is that a bunch of angry white men in Celtics jerseys come out and beat the shit out of you for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all wearing, like, Barstool Sports t-shirts.
Yeah.
They've all got, like, one name, and it's a, oh, it's Pukey!
Yeah.
Get him, Boff Bag!
A bunch of Tommies come out and beat the shit out of you.
And you're just, like, showered with Tommy points. I think his, like, if you screw up the move by one button, he just starts launching weapons at you from 22 and a half feet away. Mm-hmm. And they all just miss.
Yeah.
Terribly.
I think he does like a dive, because he dives for loose balls to fake hustle a lot, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's...
Yeah, and then he does like a dive at you.
Yeah, and then like his other finishing move is he breaks a picture frame over your head.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly that's another one of his moves. All right, the other thing that happened in that game is J.R. and Tristan Thompson made fun of Jason Tatum when Sam Decker faked out Tatum so bad he fell down.
Yeah, they did, like, what it was a very elaborate pantomime reenacting all of that stuff. It showed a lot of good space object work, and it was hilarious the degree they were making fun of an opposing player in a preseason game.
It was also hilarious for us, the Round Ball Rockers, because I would say Sam Decker and Jason Tatum are two recurring bad guys on this podcast.
They are. Jason Tatum, perhaps through no fault of his own. Sam Decker, and I think philosophically... look, we'll all know when he and Jordan Peterson start their podcast this year.
Clean your room, Sam Decker.
the ancient Cavaliers like to hunt, which is why men do not like to settle down.
All right. Let's talk about Marvin Bagley, I guess. Sean, walk us through this.
So I found out that Marvin Bagley is a rapper, and Joey, we're kind of on the fence about his potential as an NBA player. Would you say, like it seems like he's pretty good basketball, but... He was drafted by the Kings. You would say his name is pretty busty?
Yes.
And he went to Duke. So that's a lot of strikes against him. Here are some things about Marvin Bagley III. His rap name is MB35. Which is in all caps. 5 is spelled out. 3 is a regular number.
Does he wear the number 5?
I feel like he must, but I don't know.
Keep going. I'll look that up right now.
Yeah, look that up right now. So he has a number, two numbers consecutively, but one
is... He wears the number 35.
Oh, so that's 3-5. So it's not the 3 from him being Marvin Bagley III.
No.
It's his number.
That's confusing, though. He should go as Marvin, as MB335.
Yeah, and then the middle 3 is spelled out, but the N ones are 3 and 5 are just represented numerically.
Yeah.
Okay. He is putting out his first rap album this fall, which is called Big Dreams. That's dreams with a J.
Is that like after Drew Holiday?
No, it means Jesus rules everything around me.
Jesus,
so it's like a variation
Christ
on the Wu-Tang if they were virgins. can you imagine that? Like 8 virgin Wu-Tang members? Although that would have had to been when Old Dirty Bastard was like 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right? he considers himself a conscious rapper, and he does not use profanity when he raps, much like Will Smith for most of his career.
Well, doesn't...
Isn't Damian Lillard also like that, I believe, right?
No, I think Damian Lillard curses. But what I was going to say is, doesn't Iman Shumpert also consider himself a conscious rapper?
I mean, I think a lot of people consider themselves a conscious rapper. But
is that maybe why Marvin Bagley wanted to go to the Kings? Because Iman Shumpert was there.
Oh, he wanted to be mentored by Iman Shumpert?
Yeah.
The inspiration for the television show Power?
It's not Power, dude.
Oh, it's Empire.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, well, here's why I do think he was happy to go to the Kings. He wants to collaborate with Shaq.
Oh, and Shaq owns the Kings.
Long story about... Yeah, so he started talking to his dad about, like, how he loved rap music and basketball, and his dad was like, well, Shaq did both, and he just immediately started firing up Shaq videos on YouTube and studying them. Here is a quote he had. I mentioned to Shaq getting on a remix of the song he made with Biggie, You Can't Stop the Rain. I was listening to it and I texted him. I was like, we should get on a remix. He said it would be cool. Obviously, we haven't had time to do that, but it would be cool to do, and we still might have an opportunity. That's Shaq saying no.
Yeah.
Shaq is not doing a remix of a song he did with B.I.G. Shaq isn't going to be like, let's run this back.
Yeah.
But with MB35. You know, Marvin Bagley, the conscious rapper.
What I will say...
Oh, he's 19 years old. The world needs to know what a 19-year-old from Duke is thinking right now.
What I will say about this is, honestly, Marvin Bagley III does sound a lot more like a famous rapper's name than a famous basketball player's name.
Yeah, but at the same time, it still sounds like it would be like Farnsworth Bentley more
no,
than...
No. But I mean where it would be like, oh, you know Method Man's real name is Marvin Bagley.
Oh, right. And then you'd be like, well, what does Method Man go by? Oh, M35, the first number and the five is spelled out. Like, oh, I'm not going to listen to that.
Yeah. You know Lil Peep's real name, right? Marvin Bagley III.
Yeah, Ghostface Killer. He had warrants, and, you know, he knew the cops were looking for Marvin Bagley III, so he wore a mask anytime he performed.
Would you be at all surprised if Lil Xan went to Duke?
No, not
yeah,
really.
Me either.
They're opening up. Like, didn't he already graduate from Georgetown Prep?
Lil Xan, I don't know. This is a major... derailment, but Lil Xan apparently he claimed he was in the hospital the other day because he ate too many Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah.
That guy's on drugs.
But isn't that the weakest thing a rapper has ever done? Being hospitalized by food that like small children eat?
I mean, it's a lie, though. Lil Xan's whole thing is that he's sober and he's very clearly not sober.
I mean, his name is still Lil Xan, right?
Yes.
So, face tattoos he got on Xanax?
But no, that's a good question. Listeners, what is the weakest thing a rapper has ever done?
Being hospitalized for eating Flaming Hot Cheetos have to be up there.
Getting drafted second overall by the Sacramento Kings is also up there, I think.
Oh, my God. So how does this make you feel differently about Marvin Bagley III's future as an NBA player,
not
Joey?
Not particularly.
I didn't believe in him anyway.
But I just don't think fake rappers, like, I think if you asked any NBA rookie, like, 60% of them all want to release, like, a fake rap album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they grow up and become 22 years old and they're like, wow, that was stupid.
Yeah, like, oh, thank God there's no permanent record of this. Wait, delete SoundCloud. Delete SoundCloud. By the way, you can check out MB35's mixtape on SoundCloud. It has four songs and he dropped it on draft night.
Please send me that link. We will finish this show out with one of Marvin Bagley III's songs.
Yes.
All right, let's get to the real piece of news we have here. The Suns fired their GM 8 days before the season starts.
Fantastic. Just, yeah. I gotta say, in a way, Minnesota Timberwolves, not the worst front office moves of month of October.
Well, what I found to be very weird about this is how defensive of Ryan McDonough the media was when this happened.
Oh, wow.
Didn't you think that was crazy?
Yeah, yeah, it was really insane. Because, like, okay, so he's been the general manager for since 2013. And
they've gotten worse every year he was the GM.
They've gotten worse every year. Now, arguably, when he first gets hired, he makes a bunch of moves that pay off very well. But he also just inherits a team that's falsely bet. We can get into that later, but it's all of these things are like, man, he never had a chance with Robert Sarver in charge.
Which also is true.
But think about, I would say the examples are like when Dwayne Casey was fired after winning coach of the year, no one was like, really, they got to look at the ownership in Toronto to see what's going on there. And people never criticize the ownership. And yet it's the firing here is being played like Ryan McDonough was like a victim.
Yeah, it's like if the Thunder fired Sam Presti today.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God. And it must just be that he gives a lot of reporters a lot of access, right?
I don't know. I think he's been a pretty good GM. Let me go through some of his moves.
Oh, great. Okay.
May 28th, 2013, he hired Jeff Hornacek as coach. It's the first thing he did. It worked out well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, granted, he did not fire Alvin Gentry, which is like the original sin of these Suns, where, yeah, they have this falsely bad year in 2012-13, which is mainly they trade Robin Lopez for Wesley Johnson. They trade Steve Nash for a bunch of draft picks, and Channing Frye misses the whole year. Mm-hmm. And they like panic fire Alvin Gentry, and then they hire Lindsey Hunter, who's just terrible as a coach, and I think is a human being, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is a team that is primed for a rebound. So they hire Jeff Hornacek.
Okay. Then they have the fifth overall pick. He selects Alex Len.
Man, they did have him for 5 years. So congratulations for keeping him on. Like he didn't die. That's the best you can say about Alex Len there.
Then he trades in a three-team trade. He trades Jared Dudley for Eric Bledsoe and Caron Butler. Pretty good trade, honestly.
Yeah, and then I think they almost immediately just dump Caron Butler.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty injured at this point.
Yeah. Then he trades Luis Scola for Gerald Green, Miles Plumlee, and a first-round pick. That's actually a great trade.
That's a tremendous trade. Yeah, like, Skull is, like, done at that point. Well, no, he has, like, one more year. But, yeah, he's... All those guys are good for them. Yeah.
Then he trades Caron Butler for Ish Smith.
Totally fine move.
Yeah. Then he trades Shannon Brown, Marcin Gortat, Malcolm Lee, and Kendall Marshall to the Wizards for Emeka Okafor and a first-round pick that becomes Tyler Ennis.
I would say defensible trade, like getting a first round pick for Gortat. You know,
I mean, sure. Then he takes T.J. Warren with the 14th overall pick.
So they do well enough that they just miss the playoffs with this team.
Then,
thanks to these trades, but also Channing Frye comes back.
You know? Right.
They've.
So he drafts T.J. Warren 14. Tyler Ennis, 18. Bogdan Bogdanovich, 27th. And someone named Alec Brown with the 50th pick.
Okay, I don't love those moves. I mean, TJ Warren's like a fine pick at 14.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 20 points last year, baby.
Wow.
And Bogdan's a pretty good pick. He doesn't come over for 5 years or whatever, but
yeah.
He signed Zoran Dragic to a multi-year contract.
Multi-year deal. Keep him happy. Keep Zoran happy.
Trades Anthony Tolliver for a person named Tony Mitchell. I'm going to say that's a bad trade.
That's
because
a bad
I know who Anthony Tolliver is, and I do not know who Tony Mitchell is.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Trades 2 second-round picks, one which becomes Semi Ojeleye, to the Celtics for Brandon Wright.
I mean, that's bad. It's like a weird thing where they... It feels like they were making a lot of like kind of tanky moves the year before, like trading Gortat for a first-round pick and then just barely missing the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, probably Gortat would have helped, I'm going to say.
Inserts himself into the three-way trade that gets the Clippers Austin Rivers and just takes Reggie Bullock for Shavlik Randolph.
It's a good like garbage move, but like here they're trading assets for Brandon Wright, who this trade does not work out, but also misunderstands where this Suns team is.
Mm-hmm. Then he trades Goran and Zoran to the Heat for 2 first-round picks and John Sammons.
Okay. And those picks are protected. One of those picks is still 3 years away.
Right. Oh, well, and then then immediately gets in another three-team trade. Where he trades a first, Tyler Ennis and Miles Plumlee to the Bucks for Brandon Knight and Kendall Marshall again, who he's already traded.
Oh, great. So they trade. That's the famous Laker first rounder.
Mm-hmm.
That they get for, it's the best asset they get in exchange for Steve Nash.
Mm-hmm. Then he gets
get Brandon Knight.
And then he gets in another three-team trade where he trades Isaiah Thomas to the Celtics, obviously, for, what does he even get?
It's Marcus Thornton and the pick that becomes
Scal Labissiere. Okay.
Yeah.
Not a good trade.
It's Cleveland's first round pick in 2016.
I'm going to say he wins none of those trades.
No, and it also negates the fact that he got Isaiah Thomas for so cheap because he ruins the team by doing that. Like all the value of like, yeah, he didn't give up very much for Eric Bledsoe. He didn't give up very much for Isaiah Thomas. It's like, well, then he got even less when he traded them and blew up the team and lost Goran, who at the time is only like 28.
Yeah. He also traded a bunch of guys he took with those draft picks in those trades.
Yeah, I mean, he...
Like Tyler Ennis, he trades. Yeah, like...
And then he went... Yeah, and...
And it was all to get Brandon Knight. Like, that's all he gets in any of those trades. And some firsts.
Tyler Ennis, I think, is also a pick from the Nash deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so essentially he's made some shrewd moves immediately after he got hired.
Oh, no, Tyler Ennis is what he gets for Gortat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. wow. Okay, so he's... He's just moving shit around at this point.
Okay, then
this is just go ahead.
Then he saves his job and gets Devin Booker, just like with the 13th pick, which like nobody had Devin Booker as being good. That was like it was found money basically.
Yeah, and also he makes that pick in what is like not a super strong draft, I want to say.
Right.
I
think Booker's probably the best guy in that draft, and we all know how much I hate Devin Booker, so it pains me to say that.
Well, he's got... Yeah, I mean, because the guy's... Essentially, the best guy's Towns, the second best guy is Kristaps, and then besides that, it's Devin Booker. Like, he goes one pick ahead of Cameron Payne, Kelly Oubre, Scary Terry, Rashad Vaughn. Like, a lot of guys who have just been, like, thrown in the trash right after him. So,
okay. Then
Also, can I mention something?
Yeah.
This is during this. He just must somehow become friends with John Calipari or something, mm-hmm. because the other thing he's doing in these deals is just acquiring an incredible amount of players who went to Kentucky.
Right, because he also drafts Andrew Harrison in that same draft.
Is Archie Goodwin from Kentucky?
I don't know, but we're taking too long.
Anyway, yeah.
Let's keep going.
But yeah, he ends up with Brandon Knight, Devin Booker. He just has all these Kentucky guys for no reason.
All right. So he selects Devin Booker. That's good. And then he signs Tyson Chandler to a giant contract for no reason.
Well, it is for a reason. It's because he was trying to recruit LaMarcus Aldridge. Uh-huh. So that would have been their front court is Tyson Chandler and LaMarcus Aldridge joining up with like TJ Warren, PJ Tucker, and Brandon Knight.
And then,
which is the 10th best team in the West, maybe?
And then he trades Reggie Bullock, Danny Granger, and Marcus Morris, who he just signed previously to a big deal, to the Pistons for a second-round draft pick to open up the space to not sign LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yes, yes. And then essentially loses Markieff Morris as a result of trading his identical twin slash soulmate.
Yeah, who had signed to a lower market deal so they could be together.
Yeah, they signed they signed their contracts together and split an amount of money. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
February 1st, 2016, fires Jeff Hornacek as head coach.
Yeah, they also give Brandon Knight a giant contract that summer.
Then he trades Markieff Morris for DeJuan Blair, Chris Humphreys, and a first-round draft pick. That pick becomes Yorgios Papagiannis. Which, in turn, of course, becomes Marquise Chris.
Yes, yes.
Appoints Earl Watson as head coach.
Boy, not a good move. Not a great move.
Okay, then he selects Dragon Bender, number 4. Georgios Papagiannis, 13. And trades trades Bogdan Bogdanovich, again, one of the only good things he's gotten in any of these trades, mm-hmm. and the picks that become Scalabissier and Papagiannis for Marquise Chris.
Yeah.
And also selects Tyler Ulis in that draft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Then he trades PJ Tucker for Jared Sullinger and a draft pick that's going to become Alec Peters and a draft pick that's going to become George King.
God, I don't know who George King is.
Exactly. Not good.
Alec Peters has a distinct Tyler Lydon look to him.
Selects Josh Jackson with the fourth pick overall.
I don't like that.
Signs Alan Williams to a multi-year contract.
Well, he's already been cut, right?
Yeah. Signed Anthony Bennett.
Okay.
Appointed Jay Chirano as interim head coach after firing Earl Watson.
So Earl Watson had the job for a year and a half?
Yes.
Not even, but yeah, okay.
He fired
that coach like 10 days into the season? Not even 10 days
Four
into
games.
The season. Oh my god.
Trades a second round draft pick for Elfrid Payton. Okay, that's fine.
I mean, yeah, sure.
Trades Eric Bledsoe to the Bucks for Greg Monroe, a second round draft pick, and a 2019 first round draft pick. That's like protected in a bunch of weird ways.
Yeah, so they probably have the Bucks pick next year, but it's going to be like in the 20s.
Drafts DeAndre Ayton, Elia Kobo, George King, and trades Zaire Smith and a Miami unprotected pick
from
Mikal
the draw
Bridges.
Yeah. And that Mikal Bridges pick is actually the pick they got from the Lakers for Steve Nash.
Uh-huh.
So they got it back.
Signs Trevor Ariza as a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Signs Devin Booker to a giant multi-year deal, and then he immediately breaks his hand.
Uh-huh.
Hey, this is a good move. Trades cash to the Sixers for Rishon Holmes and $1 million.
I mean, I guess they have four other centers.
True. I do like Rishon Holmes, though. And then he trades Jared Dudley and a second-round pick to the Nets for Darrell Arthur and a second-round pick. But the second-round pick is top 35 protected. then he trades Marquise Chris and Brandon Knight for Ryan Anderson and DeAnthony Melton.
Which is, I guess, a trade I like, but it required Ryan Anderson just giving up a bunch of money to make it because he just wanted out of Houston. It went off the bench.
So here's a question, Sean.
Yeah.
Why are we defending that guy like he's a good GM?
I don't understand it. He's the ultimate, like, oh, just acquire assets, dude, without building anything that's ever been a playable roster.
Well, and it's like the ultimate, like, shifting the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about how many three-team trades he made.
He made three in one day.
Yeah, it's just... and he basically, like, acquires a lot of draft picks and then tosses them away like they're worthless.
Mm-hmm. Because he is bad at drafting.
Yeah, and he's constantly giving up on the players he drafted within like a year and a half. I don't understand why you're crediting this guy. Like it's like,
I mean, it is ultimate, now, you know what it might, to be fair, Robert Sarver does fucking suck.
Yeah, and I'm sure he, you know, many of these decisions were probably Robert Sarver things. I would say maybe when he made all those, that all that crazy Dragic and Isaiah out, Brandon Knight in, that feels like it could be a Robert Sarver move.
That was his fault because he signed all these starting point guards and then they were all unhappy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, any value he had from, like, being, but he also didn't sign Dragic in the first place, you know?
Right.
It just feels like this is what you would do if you, you know, they talk about people that are just kind of like rotisserie basketball, fantasy GMs. This is exactly what a fantasy GM does. Just like moving shit around and like playing for, they acquired so many first round picks and they got so little out of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess the jury's out on their team now, which has, what, four rookies? Five rookies?
Yeah.
But I don't really understand why he got fired now and not, like, 2 years ago.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. There's one more story I want to get before we get to a bunch of reader questions.
Oh, yeah.
Dallas hired professional gambler and Bitcoin miner Haralabob Vulgaris.
Oh, yes.
He's really Mark Cuban's kind of guy, isn't he?
Right. He really does seem like they share a lot of traits in common. Like, super respectful of women. A lot of respect for regulations and laws.
Mm-hmm.
Probably don't like to dress up particularly. Yeah.
They both like to act like they're, like, geniuses.
Yeah, because I do believe Haralabob was making a lot of money gambling on basketball, but then he stopped gambling on basketball, and I'm just wondering, how good was he at gambling on basketball?
Well, this is actually a funny thing. Our friend of the pod, Brendan Lynch, follows a lot of professional sports gamblers.
Oh, I love it.
And they all are like, Haralabob is nobody. We've never heard of him. Like, any big fish who was making a lot of money gambling, we know, and we've never heard of this fucking guy.
Who, like, lived in Canada, not Las Vegas, or... and, I mean, I'm not saying he's bad at analyzing basketball, necessarily. Like, he's... I actually like him on podcasts.
But and I will say, he always talks about how his biggest win was betting on the We Believe Warriors. And if I had had any money at all, I also would have made that bet. Like, right. Anyone who'd paid attention that season knew the Warriors were going to beat the Mavericks because, like, the Mavericks just couldn't beat them. that year.
Yeah, it was just the worst matchup possible.
They were like 4-0 in a year, team. And the Mavericks had won like 68 games, and the Warriors had beaten them every time. Or maybe, I guess it was 2 out of 2, but still.
Well, I would just say that Dallas Mavericks team, yeah, they won 67 games, but they were designed correctly to beat the Spurs. And what the Spurs did not have is a bunch of crazy athletic 6'7 dudes who shot threes with no conscience.
Yeah.
Like playing a conventional offense, they would have been just fine.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, the other thing he bet heavily was the 2001 Los Angeles Lakers playoff run.
Sure. Wow, no one knew that was going to happen.
He likes to he for a while like really I guess his thing was analyzing referee tendencies, mm-hmm. which seems like a kind of a questionable focus for sports gambling success, but what do I know? But recently he does not tweet nearly as much about basketball. He tweets much more about cryptocurrency. I would say he's possibly pumping the price of a stock is what it would be called if it were mm-hmm. a company and not, I don't, a series of equations or whatever the fuck Bitcoin is.
Haralabob was basketball Twitter Elon Musk, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm not.
What exactly is he going to do for Dallas, though?
He's director of quantitative research and development, dude.
I don't know what any of that means.
It means numbers. He's going to run analytics. He's going to hire a bunch of nerds and then, like go on Shark Tank or whatever.
I'm just surprised that they wouldn't just have a better analytics department than him already. But maybe I don't know.
Donnie Nelson Jr.'s gut, dude? I love that foreign guy. That was their analytics department before.
Look, if we just develop Dwight Powell and Dorian Finney-Smith for 5 years, they'll eventually be legitimate NBA eighth men. I also wonder if this was perhaps a hire they'd been thinking about and that they did once it turned out there was another sexual predator employed by the Mavs that wasn't in that NBA report.
Oh, 100%.
It is going to make no difference.
Yeah.
Also, does he seem like a guy who's going to be good at, like, managing people?
No. All right. Let's should we do some reader mail?
This is Round Ball Rock Reader Mail. Communications from listeners. Why do we call it reader mail? It is confusing for robots.
All right, so our first question comes from a friend of the pod and Yusuf Nurkic Stan Corbin Smith. And he asks, what NBA player bumps Ba Wit Da Ba most frequently?
The Kid Rock anthem. I think it's Kyle Korver because I think you have to be old enough to really be like I don't feel like Ba Wit Da Ba is something that like really stood the test of time. And I feel like it's exactly the right like timing and sort of like false.
Yeah, he looked like that too.
And he was like, Kyle Korver was like 16 or 17 when that song came out. And I can imagine it still being his pregame pump up music even now.
Yeah, I think that's the correct answer. I think Kyle Korver is the correct answer. I've been racking my brain here. I could see Ron Baker too.
Yeah, he's just a little young for it. He's probably more familiar with Kid Rock's excursions into country music.
Sure. All right. Lewis Keene at This Lewis asks, to which NBA player is this preseason most important?
This is very this is an interesting question, I think, because, I mean, when I first looked at the question, I was like, Blake Griffin. And then I thought, actually, it doesn't matter to him. I kind of think it was Jahlil Okafor, and then he got hurt. Just because he's, like, really, like, rebuilding his life and going to therapy and, like, proving he belongs. And then he just turned his ankle. He's out for 3 weeks. Could get passed up on the depth chart by, Alexis Iaginca? Ajinka?
I think it's Tyler Ulis.
Oh, trying to get his spot on...
Because he's got to get... Well, he's not going to make a spot on the Warriors, but he's trying to get a spot anywhere.
Uh-huh.
You know, like...
So you feel like...
I don't think the preseason matters for team for players already in rotations. You're trying... It matters for those guys trying to make teams.
So it's like he's a guy on the bubble.
Yeah, and Tyler Ulis is a guy people like... already, like, teams like him. They want to see that he can play.
So you're saying this question has to be someone who's on, like, a non-guaranteed
yes,
deal.
Yes, I do. Oh. At Outer Right Field asks, what crimes did Bradley Beal commit in a past life to deserve spending every day for the next 6 to 7 months with Dwight Howard, Austin Rivers, and John Wall?
I would just say he left out Markieff Morris and Kelly Oubre from that question. you know, on Roundball Rock, we've been very upfront about our belief in the reincarnation of the human soul. So I believe that he's like, I think he was like the mean director of like a shady insane asylum. And so now his ironic punishment is that he has to be in the asylum and he's an inmate himself. So I think like
right.
shady...
So he's like Harley Quinn.
English asylum. Yeah, I guess who like never fell in love.
Yeah.
Maybe. No, but I think he's like, yeah, exactly. Just he's like maybe Dr. Chilton from Silence of the Lambs,
but I feel
like maybe like a Victorian version of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what I think. Abuses of the mentally ill. And elder abuse.
I think
crimes.
I think he was former President Ronald Reagan.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Who ruined California by privatizing all the mental hospitals, and that's why there are so many crazy people on the streets still to this day.
And he's on after Ronald Reagan shipped all those guns to Central America. He went to the Bradley Beal ended up in the gun runningest organization, the Washington Wizards.
Okay, this is one I think we're probably going to talk about for a long time. And at Carlos Animals asks, who is the most NBA player?
The most NBA player. I thought about this. And it may be because we'd been talking about him earlier in the show, but I kind of feel like J.R. Smith is the most NBA player. Like the highs and the lows, off the court and on, like he's a guy who's been in a dunk contest, but he's a three-point specialist. He's often an amazing defender, and then sometimes he goes to talk to a friend and forgets that his player's on the court. He has a lot of tattoos. He's been in fights. He's been the victim of fights. He's been a champion. He's been on the worst team in the league. And he feels like eternal. Like he just checks so many boxes of things I consider NBA. Like came out of high school.
Was a Nick.
Yeah, kind of lies about his background. Parties a lot, but is like a veteran of parties who like when people get stabbed outside of nightclubs, he's like, that's why you have your limo waiting for you when you come outside. Like he's like he feels like an NBA veteran that's almost like a military veteran because he can like smell the enemy and ambushes approaching him. And he's made love to Rihanna before, which is like the pinnacle of an NBA player's existence.
I think that's a good answer. My answer was going to be James Harden.
Ooh.
Mainly because like branding is so important to him that he's done that to his face forever, you know? Also,
yeah, that's a remarkable commitment to what has to be extremely unpleasant on a day-to-day basis.
He's just, he's tricky, but he's got sneaky athleticism. He's also, there are whispers of, like, weird things he's done, which is very NBA.
Yeah.
You know, like, rumors that maybe he was drinking lean during a playoff series, that sort of thing. That's very NBA. And also he hates Moses Malone Jr. And as we all know, Moses Malone was the most ABA player.
Oh, that's a really good. Yeah.
He also asked, and for the sake of balance, who is the least NBA player?
Oh, who's the least NBA player? This one is harder, I think, because it's like what I really I'm trying to think of somebody that has like the mentality of a different kind of athlete. And so to me, like you're looking at like a loner.
Oh, that's very interesting, because I think of this as NCAA versus NBA.
Oh, that's what you're thinking.
But either way, I'll pick the fucking I'm gonna pick the least NBA player.
The most college player?
Yeah, who is the most college player? It would have been Psycho T, but he's no longer in the league. I think Tyler Hansbrough is maybe the ultimate answer for this question, like all time. Christian Laettner.
He just seems like he didn't have like the right energy for the NBA. No, even though he's like had so much energy, it was like the wrong kind of energy. You know, like a it's like a car that if it drives faster, like the hubcaps start coming off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like pieces of his own cartilage and stuff. Uh-huh. Oh yeah, but he's not in the league anymore. So do you think it's like McBuckets?
No.
The only thing is, he seems like he's tried to transform himself right into actually an NBA player.
And that's the thing. It might be Myers Leonard.
Oh, man. Boy.
But yeah. There also is something very NBA about Myers Leonard, actually, where he's, like, selling bad clothes.
And he's, like, super jacked.
Yeah, and, like, he's got, like, a really bad tattoo.
He's, like, he's definitely trying to get... he has like a very super sad upbringing.
You know, I'm gonna
say feel bad about making fun of him.
You know, I actually think the least NBA player is Joe Ingles, and that's kind of why people don't get how good he is. Do you know what I mean? Because they look at him and they're like, "This guy doesn't look like an NBA player."
Looks like a guy that would like lead carry Kentucky in an NCAA final, but then go undrafted.
Yeah, like, he's like if Adam Morrison was 40.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, also, like, the ultimate, you know, like, we're picking our ultimate NBA guys, and we're like, well, someone who, like, was, like, not really that much of a part of the NCAA. Joe Ingles got to the league when he was, like, 27.
Yeah.
He's, like, the ultimate. He was, like, a 12 and done.
Yeah.
You know, he's...
Now, I also was thinking about this, and I want to pick the most D-League player, the most G-League player in the NBA, and that is clearly Glenn Robinson III.
Oh, man. And, oh, yeah, like, son of a famous player. He's just been around long enough, and the whole time you're like, I'm not sure if he's on, like, the Rio Valley bike. Like, or is he still... But, yeah, like ability to really dunk... also, like, being anonymous while having a famous name is truly incredible.
Yeah, it's very D-League, G-League.
Yeah.
Chris Paul is the most baseball player in the NBA.
I mean, he...
Does that make sense?
Well, he's, like, just razzing the refs all the time, and he's, like, he's essentially... Like, if Chris Paul was a baseball player, how often would he step out of the box during an at-bat?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
Because he's like tricky. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At first I was like, oh, Kirk Heinrich, and then I'm like, no, Kirk Heinrich is extremely NBA. Like the fact that he's like almost has an exoskeleton is
to be Grayson Allen, but I didn't want to pick him because he hasn't truly been in the NBA yet.
Well, he is like a super collegiate for sure. The least NBA player. It's like, it's got to be like someone who just like hates basketball.
But see, I kind of see hating basketball as like being very NBA. That's a pretty common theme.
And in like big men too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I just don't want to pick like a white guy. Because sure. It feels like that's the easy answer is being like, oh, this white guy seems like he really does not belong in the NBA. I think it might be all that being said, I kind of think it's like Tyler Zeller.
Oh, you know, who to me is very not NBA actually? And I, you know what? I want to change my answer.
Oh, okay.
From Joe Ingles. I think LaMarcus Aldridge is the least NBA player in the NBA.
Wait, really?
Yeah, just like... Because again, he's like a guy who like... he's. I mean, look, he's very good at the NBA, but I think of this as a personality question, and his personality does not feel like an NBA player's personality to me, where he's like... jealous, but also quiet, you know? Like, he's, like, weirdly anti-team, but also is, like, too nice to not be a team, to, like, not, you know, to be truly selfish. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, I think his Hall of Fame speech will be really interesting for that reason. Oh, you know who I think is the least NBA player? This is who it is. It's Andrew Wiggins.
I was thinking that.
He's got all the gifts and just like doesn't put it together, doesn't have like the right mentality, still like he still feels like he's a college player that's going to lose right before the Sweet 16. And he's like no offense, but he's Canadian and the NBA, the recent NBA landscape is littered with disappointing Canadian players.
But doesn't that almost make him more NBA by being a disappointing Canadian?
Because of Naismith or something? I mean, he also went from Canada to Kansas like the good doctor. But no, being a Canadian makes you less NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know you're doing something that your nationality does not value ultimately. Like it is still like the number three sport in your country.
Sure.
But yeah, just like not a good teammate, very individualist. He's like he's like almost like an Albert Bell figure.
Yeah.
I mean without
it's funny that
he doesn't like
think,
mow down kids in a truck.
It's funny to me that you think like being an individualist and not a very good teammate is not NBA, where to me I'm like, yeah, it's pretty NBA.
Like I just feel like you have been playing on teams for many years, whereas you can be a baseball player and like not talk to anybody.
I also want to say I think Latrell Sprewell is the most NBA player of all time.
I mean, I don't think that's wrong, especially his contract negotiating status is extremely NBA. It's like very NBA to be cheated out of tens of millions of dollars.
All right. Good question, Carlos.
Thanks,
listeners.
That's a good one.
You tell us, who do you think are the most and least NBA players out there? Tweet at us at roundrockpod or email us at roundrockpod@gmail.com. Our friend CJ Toledano asks, if the game could be played with any other object but a basketball, what would it be?
This is a great question. I'm going to say I would like to see what it would be like if you could have something that was like in between a basketball and a beach ball, like just a much lighter ball.
So like a volleyball?
Yeah, I would like it to be lighter than a like closer to a beach ball, I guess. I would like to see what it's like to have like a very floaty ball, because you have these like giant, super muscular, athletic dudes who have to like just tap a little ball in. I think the shooting would be hilarious. I think it would add a new dimension to rebounding, and just figuring out what people's like dribble moves would be great.
See, it's funny that you went light, because I went heavy, and I want to see them play a game with a fucking medicine ball.
So, like, no dribbling at all?
No. Well, I mean, some dribbling. I want them to figure out how to make a really heavy basketball medicine ball. You know what I mean?
That's like extra bouncy,
that can also bounce, maybe. Yeah. But I so, just like, want to see, but I also want it big like that.
Okay, so is the hoop bigger?
The hoop's way bigger, yeah. Okay, I mean, it's big enough to fit the medicine ball through it.
But you're you have these guys are, like, heaving it now.
Yeah. Also, I want it to, like, feel dangerous coming off the rim. Like, you know what I mean? Where it's, like, getting a rebound is, like, you have to get your hands up, because if it hits you in the head, you are out of the game.
Yeah, that's pretty great. The other thing I would suggest, I don't know how to, you would ever standardize this, but when I was in elementary school, they had like those very standard playground, kind of like somewhat tough red balls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kickball.
And one of them was like left by, it must have just been left by a radiator or something, because it got kind of like burned and developed like a weird kind of bump on it. And it was very exciting to play basketball with, because the bounces got very unpredictable, because you weren't really sure when the like mutant part of the ball would hit the ground instead.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And like when you shot it, you had to like make sure that if you hit the backboard, you didn't go growth first. So I think that would, like, unpredictable physics would also make it pretty interesting.
Yeah, I also thought about that, and my second answer was going to be an overcooked turkey. Like a full-on turkey.
Like a 22-pound turkey.
Yeah, that was overcooked enough where it would sort of bounce.
Also, would not mind seeing what tennis ball basketball would look like.
I would also thought of egg. I want to see play with one egg. Like, and if the egg breaks, the game is over.
So you've got to shoot so delicately. Yeah, and
you've got to get a swish. And if someone has to be down there to catch the egg when it comes out of the hoop.
You're probably playing like 9-on-9. Yeah.
Okay, our next question comes from at Feeling Mini. He says, I enjoyed your guys' explanation on why you loathe Mike Dunleavy Jr. Can you explain why you guys love Anthony Randolph so much? And I want to, before you go, I want to explain very quickly that Sean doesn't really love Anthony Randolph that much. Joey loves Anthony Randolph.
Yeah,
you don't have to be included in my weird obsession with Anthony Randolph.
I like him a lot. He's just not on the level of like Don Nelson for me.
Sure. To explain my love of Anthony Randolph, he's just one of the most interesting players I've ever seen. And he came at a point when the Warriors were particularly depressing. It was right after they'd blown up the We Believe team for almost no reason. And Steph Curry was not there yet. And they picked this guy who was like, you know how Giannis feels like weirdly revolutionary when you watch him, where he was like this super tall skinny guy who could dribble and dunk on people? Anthony Randolph was like that, but not good.
Yeah.
And also he would get so emotional during games. I saw him cry during NBA games multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there was just something so compelling about that.
Yeah, I think the time he came around is very specific, because it's a year after the Warriors have the We Believe team. It's all starting to fall apart, but also it's 2008, and like right as they pick him, Obama's like clinching the Democratic nomination, and it's like this idea that, like, you know, this decade was really rough. We're 7 years out from 9/11. Maybe things are going to turn around, and Anthony Randolph is also just this young symbol of hope. And then, you know, in September, the economy crashes, and Anthony Randolph starts actually playing NBA basketball, and that's rough.
Well,
and,
no, his first year he was exciting and pretty good.
I mean,
he does one of those classic bad rookie things where he's good the last 2 months of a season. When no one is playing hard.
Well, and he was also a very exciting fantasy player, where he was like,
he was like two blocks a game and like two steals, and he'd hit like a three.
Right, he'd like block a guy, he'd talk shit to the guy, and then like, you know, his pants would fall down on the next possession, and he'd start
crying
a little bit.
I think,
but yeah, his first year.
The best way to explain loving Anthony Randolph, we will post this clip if we can find it, is the Yao Ming sequence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where
other players hated him.
Yeah, he dunks on Yao Ming twice, Right. And also blocks Yao Ming's shot, but also gets kicked out of the game.
Oh, the other thing that's really inspiring about him is the story of him getting drafted is that the Kings were picking right ahead of the Warriors.
Oh, and Don Nelson tricked the Kings. Yeah.
So he invites Jason Thompson, who's like almost 4 years older than Anthony Randolph, to work out together, and just annihilates Randolph. And the Kings are like, this is our man, Jason Thompson. Warriors were so stupid letting us see him at this workout. And it was just them to trick him. But again, most NBA front office moves that are tricky do not pan out long term.
Except for the Latrell Sprewell trick, where Don Nelson claimed he loved Yinka Diarra like a ton.
I mean, Nelly's always playing poker, baby. The draft room is just an extension of the poker room.
All right, and now our final question, Sean. Uh-huh. But yeah, yes. We'll post the Yao Ming clip. I think it will explain what was so amazing and horrible about Anthony Randolph at the same time, you know?
Yeah, it's a great sequence. We'll put it up.
He dunks on Yao Ming a lot. I believe he also blocks a Yao shot. This is all in like a 3-minute sequence, and then Yao like destroys him, and Anthony Randolph cries and gets two technicals and gets kicked out of the game.
It's all so fast, too.
All right, this comes from our friend @CrushChan. If you replace Shaquille O'Neal in every Jack Nicholson role, a.k.a. Shaq Nicholson, does it make the movie better or worse?
Okay.
I think not go through every Jack Nicholson role.
Maybe we can go through his like award-winning roles.
I'm just gonna pick some randos.
Yeah,
for
yeah, great.
Okay, let's go with Easy Rider.
I think it's a very different movie with Shaq because those guys do not successfully beat the lawyer up, mm-hmm. and then for the rest of the movie, Captain America and the other guy, I don't remember his name, have like a lawyer present for a lot of their shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like rednecks would feel like they could shoot at him with community.
Better.
I'm saying Easy Rider's better with Shaq.
You think it's better with Shaq?
Better with Shaq.
I think it's worse with Shaq. Okay, although fine. I do want to see him on the back of a motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, you know what? That tops it actually. Yeah, better. Okay. Chinatown.
That's better with Nicholson, I think. He's on screen. He's in every scene of that movie, I believe.
Also, Roman Polanski would not be able to cut Shaq's nose with a switchblade.
He can't reach his nose. Yeah.
Yeah. 5 Easy Pieces.
You know, I think Nicholson's better, except for the diner scene. I want to hear Shaq do the chicken salad sandwich monologue where they aren't serving toast. And he's like, I want you to hold a pickle. Mm-hmm. I want you to hold a mustard. I want you to hold the mayonnaise. I want you to hold the chicken sandwich. I want you to hold it right between your legs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just that scene, Shaq.
Okay. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I don't know if Shaq can pull off the role of Ranald McMurphy. I would like to see Shaq. Well, that's the thing. Like Shaq, I feel like, would break that window very early in the film.
Yeah, that's the thing. Shaq clearly should be playing Chief Bromden.
Yeah.
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 All right. Let's go with The Shining.
The Shining. I'd like to see Shaq try it. like, also, for some reason, the idea of Shaq being frustrated writing a novel is really funny to me. But also, if they zoom in on that old-timey party and it turns out that Shaq was there in 1922...
Yeah. That part is good.
Okay,
want to see a man that big torturing Shelley DeVoe.
Oh yeah, it'd just be too scary.
Yeah.
Him like going through the maze. He'd be like, God damn it. Yeah. Okay, Nicholson wins that one.
It's close, though, because that picture really... And Shaq at a typewriter is pretty good. You know what? I think I do want to see Shaq in The Shining, actually. All right, what about Batman?
Oh, I think you want Shaq Nicholson.
I think you want Shaq Nicholson as the Joker as well. I don't think Jack Nicholson is very good as the Joker, frankly.
Have you ever rapped with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah, and Shaq would do some fun dancing with those cool Prince songs. It would be good.
Well, and like I would say the other thing you got to do is you got to cast Kobe Bryant in the Jack Palance role.
All right, what about a few
Kobe,
good men?
You're my number one. Kobe, you're my number one. Oh, actually, no, the scene would be, how does my ass taste?
All right, a few good men, John.
I think Nicholson, because Shaq would be like, I don't know, Shaq's pretty into the military and authority.
Yeah, he is like a fascist. Don't forget, Shaq's a cop, everyone.
Yeah. I don't know if he can pull off the courtroom scene.
I don't think he could.
He'd just like start, he'd just want to joke around too much.
All right, here's one where I think Shaq wins, like, hands down. It's not even close. Uh-huh. And that is the movie Wolf.
Oh, fantastic. Shaq should have been in, yeah.
Shaq should star in Wolf anyway.
They should remake it. Michael Nichols is still alive. Come on, make it with Shaq. Your greatest triumph. Mike Nichols is dead. Sorry.
About Schmidt. I don't think Shaq can pull off About Schmidt, dude.
That's a tough ask.
Shaq would the only that's scene? The only scene Shaq could pull off, I think.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the scene. I don't know if Shaq, even after his work in Uncle Drew, can really pull off that kind of like old man sadness.
What about As Good As It Gets?
I think Shaq could do that one.
I think Shaq could also do that one pretty well.
No, just like bullying Greg Kinnear.
Yeah.
Also, I kind of feel like Shaq and Helen Hunt would have some chemistry.
Yeah. Anger Management feels like a Shaq movie already.
Yeah, like he's not in that.
And finally, The Departed, Sean.
I gotta say, I don't think Nicholson's very good, and I think Shaq adds a weird...
I do, too.
Like, Shaq's more menacing than Jack Nicholson in that movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he would do the movie theater scene with the dildo, and I think that would maybe make the movie stronger if Shaq just opted out of that.
All right, now, for a counterbalance, we added this ourselves.
Yeah.
Are there any movies you want to see where Jack Nicholson replaces Shaq?
All right. Well, I'd like to see him. I mean, I don't think he can pull off the athleticism needed in the Uncle Drew movie, but I'd like to see him try those emotional scenes. Especially, I would like write more scenes for him and actor Nate Robinson, who was tremendous.
I think this is a pretty easy answer, actually. I want to see Jack Nicholson as Steel.
Oh, okay. I would like to see Jack Nicholson as Kazam.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like if Jack Nicholson had gotten into, like, bad money problems.
Oh, like Robert De Niro?
You could have just... Oh, yeah, exactly. Like De Niro, where Kazam's like, I gotta grant you wishes, kid.
I also wouldn't mind seeing him play the Shaq's role in Freddy Got Fingered.
No, and I think he also could be... I would have liked to see him maybe give it a shot in The Wash.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give that movie a little more balance. And then also Thunderstruck. I wouldn't mind seeing him in Thunderstruck opposing Kevin Durant as like an old man who took his... Oh, my God. I didn't realize Shaq's character in Uncle Drew is literally just named Big Fella. I would like to see him in, like, a reality series where Jack Nicholson is challenged to do things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, Shaq versus. So, yeah. Jack versus. But it's all, like, playing poker, seducing a 23-year-old, like escaping liability when your friend gets busted with a bunch of cocaine. Like that would be, yeah, I would like that.
Yeah, there was one other one. Oh, did you know Shaq played a character named Detective Earl Dayton on the television show Southland?
What?
I'm looking at Shaq's IMDb page right now, and yes.
I don't think I'm totally familiar with what it's a TNT
Southland show. Was a gritty TNT cop show.
Jesus Christ, that went for 5 seasons.
And there's an episode where Shaq plays Detective Earl Dayton in the episode The Felix Paradox.
Incredible. Oh, that stars Sean Hatosi from Alpha Dog.
I believe it's pronounced Hattasi.
Hattasi?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, see Thomas Howell also on the show. All right. There are some weird things on Shaq's IMDb page.
He works a lot.
Yeah. He's in the remake of What Women Want that's in pre-production right now called What Men Want.
Oh yeah. No, who can tell what men want? There's just nothing in our society telling us that. So thank God you can finally figure out what men are interested in. Without them opening their mouths one single
time. It's also weird Shaq wasn't on The Simpsons until 2017.
Wow.
Seems like that took a while. It took too long.
Simpsons.
All right. Yeah. And readers, just so you know, you can always send us questions. Well, this was a reader-specific episode because we're waiting on that Jimmy Butler trade before we do the Northwest preview. But we'll always answer questions. Thank you to all our readers and listeners. We have another thing we want to do here, Sean, before we leave.
Well, we have some correspondents. They love comic books. They've appeared on the podcast briefly in the past. They're identical twins. It's Brooke and Robin Lopez. Yeah, at the movies.
Brooke and Robin Lopez at the movies. Twin brothers in who? And fandom. DC versus Marvel. Offense versus defense. Nerds who are jocks. Post-ops versus hard screens. Jocks who are nerds. Cain versus Abel. The Snyder Cut. Take it away, Brooke. Or Robin. I'm not really sure who is who.
Hi, this is Robin Lopez, center for the Chicago Bulls. I'm not really an
Brooke
NBA...
Lopez.
Shut up, Brooke. I'm trying to Milwaukee do the intro. Bucks. Brooke plays for the Bucks, which means he's uncomfortably close to me living in the city of Chicago. But it does mean that we can get together and watch movies from our favorite genre, which is comic book movies. We're supposed to say that together, Brooke.
Oh, sorry. This weekend, we saw Venom, which stars Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock. Journalist Eddie Brock is trying to take down Carlton Drake, the notorious and brilliant founder of the Life Foundation. While investigating one of Drake's experiments, Eddie's body emerges from with the alien Venom, leaving him with superhuman strength and power. Twisted, dark, and fueled by rage, Venom tries to control the new and dangerous abilities that Eddie finds so intoxicating. That's a summary. Now you go, Robin!
All right, fine. You read that summary perfectly fine, Brooke. I'm supposed to find places to compliment your actions so we're not always feuding. I thought
being
the movie...
a little brother sucks.
Well, I'm minutes older, and that means that I'm the lead host on the podcast, and it also means that I get to choose our first item of movie candy at the screening.
Oh, shut up. I hate you.
I chose Sour Patch Kids.
Oh, I wanted Mike and Ike's.
I mean, we bought them both, but we opened the Sour Patch Kids first because of seniority. I thought they did a great job making a Venom movie without having Spider-Man, who is part of course, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I didn't think that Venom was sick and twisted enough, though.
Why? He was pretty sick and twisted. He ain't that guy.
But I want him to be more twisted. I want him to have the rage of a Serge Ibaka, the ferocity of a Bobby Portis, and the pure, just evil twistedness of Jared Leto's Joker.
Let's talk about Tom Hardy. As always, I thought Tom Hardy was amazing in this movie, Robin.
Yeah,
but not quite as amazing as he was in The Dark Knight Rises, which,
no.
Ever since I saw that movie, I've been planning for how I would deal with a Bane situation if it happened at a basketball game.
That's incredible. What would you do, Brooke? That would be so scary.
Oh, I'd post him up, I'd take him on the low block, and I'd do a really pretty jump hook over Bane.
Oh my God, Rob Brooke, that's so stupid. The League of Shadows doesn't respect your jumper. Here's what I would do. I'd get in the path of Bane. I wouldn't let him move the bombs to the center of the field. I'd move my feet, and I'd draw a charge.
That's stupid. You gotta play offense against Bane, Robin.
You gotta trust your teammates. That's how Batman eventually defeats people. He gets the police out of the sewers.
Anyway,
what I liked about Tom Hardy's performance was, as always, the voice. There's no other movie star who's as easy to understand on the screen with the diction and who opens his mouth just the right amount. I felt like I was back home with Brooke.
I've got to say, Venom is maybe my favorite character. When we lived together in New York, we went to Comic-Con, me and Robin. And dude, I was Venom, and he was Carnage.
Yeah. Brooke likes Venom the best, but I kind of prefer Carnage because he's more twisted.
Yeah, he's like Bobby Portis.
Yeah, where
so
there's no...
sick and twisted.
Venom has a human inside him, but Carnage is just the embodiment of evil and murder, kind of like Phil Jackson.
I've got to say, I really like Venom because he's a symbiote, and in some ways I feel like you, Robin, are a symbiote to me, Brooke.
What?
Yeah, stop being a symbiote. Stop sucking off everything about me.
Oh, just because we both went to Stanford together? That's because we're smart,
you're
Brooke.
Stealing my life force, Robin.
I'm not a symbiote. I'm just adaptable to a lot of situations. I hate you, too.
And I hate your cat.
Yeah, what the heck?
That's
my cat is misunderstood.
Out of New York.
What?
I hate your stupid cat.
What, you said that the Nets were doing that because they wanted cap space.
Well, the Nets are wrong. I hate your cat. I hate you, Robin.
I thought we were getting together so well, but I guess it makes sense that our cats don't get along.
But one thing I didn't hate was the movie Venom. It was really good.
Yeah.
And it was a huge hit at the box office this weekend. It made $89.8 million, which is almost as much as I made off of just Mikhail Prokhorov.
Oh my God. It had the October...
What's it like being super poor, Robin?
I hate you so much. Look, Venom set a box office record for the month of October, which is kind of like being the leading scorer in the history of the Nets.
Hey, at least I'm the leading scorer in something, stupid. What are you the leading scorer in? Punching mascots?
I was the leading scorer with your high school girlfriend, Brooke.
Hey, that's not cool!
Yeah, that's cool.
You know what is cool, though?
What's that?
When Venom sticks his tongue out, and he's like,
oh, it was so sick when, I gotta say, Brooke, as much as being around you and your cat makes me sick, it's not as sick as Venom.
It's so, so good. Venom was so good. I give it 4.5 jump hooks out of 5.
And I give it 5, my natural position, and where I am a defensive stalwart. Brooke, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you want to go see another comic book movie at a theater equidistant to Chicago and Milwaukee later this fall?
Yeah, I think we could do that.
I think you get to choose the candy first this time.
Oh, that's so sweet of you, Robin. Robin, you're the best older brother a Lopez could ask for.
Brooke, and you're one of my better brothers.
Back to you, Sean and Joey.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, those guys really liked the movie.
Yeah,
I don't know that I learned a lot about the movie, but
it didn't seem like they thought he was sick and twisted enough. That's really the only thing I got out of it.
Yeah, I mean, they like things that are sick. Like, who was even in the movie besides Tom Hardy?
They didn't even talk about who the bad guy was.
Yeah,
Riz Ahmed is the bad guy in that movie, by the way.
I did get an email from Robin previewing the show, but most of it was just about the running time and their troubles deciding where to park at the theater garage. There were apparently some purple nurples administered in the car.
All right, Sean, plug something.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have a thing on the Shocker that'll be up tomorrow morning. That when this episode goes up, you can come read it. It's about baseball postseason slogans, and I'm going to actually give you the title real quickly. MLB postseason mottos: the bad, the worse, and the fucking ugly. So it's one of the wokest pieces you're going to read about baseball's postseason slogans.
And then as for me, a friend of the show, Chris Garcia, has a Comedy Central Presents half hour this weekend. Watch that, please.
Yeah, he was the one who said that Woody Allen should have to play for the Knicks. One of the funniest things that anyone has ever said on Round Ball Rock. It's a good special, too.
First person to whose wedding I spoke at to be on television for half an hour. And then, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Frankie Muniz, where earlier today I tweeted, heading over to at Odyssey Aquarium to hopefully pay a visit to Jazzy the Penguin and see some other interesting water creatures.
Oh my god, keep that penguin away from him. Zoo.
Weird dude.
Aquarium.
Shut it down, let's go home.
Trust the process.
Trust the process.
Look. Of a lion, I know they was lying. When I was going through the motions, I wasn't even trying. Now I'm all up in the game like EA, trying to clean my thoughts. I ain't worried about what he say, I worry about what she say, cause that'll cause drama. I don't want no problems, they told me get it, I went and got it. I ain't playing games with them. Visionary flow, I'm trying to be a billionaire by 23, LeBron James with them. The game's so superficial, man, I can't even lie. Can't even feel no emotion, dog, I can't even cry. And who am I? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Ain't worried about the small stuff, I'm thinking bigger picture now. Got my head on the swivel, never know who with you now. Cause they'll build you up so bad just so they can get you down. Wow, I'm really learning the high lessons. Bass got delivery like I'm sending the iMessage. That's why I'm texting, I don't like phone calls. Off the wall, like Mike Jack, always got him in awe. Need a round of applause. I don't do this for y'all, I don't do this for them, I do this thing for the cause. R.I.P. my dog Freddie, I was dropping my jaw when I heard the news. Remember we would go out and ball for real. This life can end any second, don't you forget it. Got one life to live, now think of how you gonna live it. They was trying to hold me down with the rest of them. I was livid, I was serious about this thing, and they really thought I was kidding. Dog, I'm really finna snap like I'm going broke. Reggie Miller flow, they y'all choke cause they y'all jokes. Shoot it in my zone, hit a three and leave them all soaked. My flow so clean, you the opposite with no soap. Got no hope for these haters that's trying to poke at the game. Ain't never played, that's how I'm knowing they lame. Need to stay in they lane. Matter of fact, they don't know where to go. Yeah, I hear them talking, I'm just looking like whatever, bro. Got a lot to say and I'm just really trying to let it go. These tricks up my sleeve, but I don't really think they're ready though. Live from the zone and where the sun out. Time to hit the gym with Sundance, bring that gun out.
out. I ain't talking Glocks, I'm just trying to have some fun now. Putting up these shots, now I think it's time to run out. Jack Ramsey's been doing this my whole life and they can't stand me. This hard work and dedication, it's gonna come in handy. Yeah, I'm so focused, man. I'm just working on my game, you should know this, man. Yelling dream out the window where that new school bands. My circle small, circle tight, I'm yelling no new friends. I can't do it, this love for the game, I can't lose it. And to deal with all these things that I'm seeing, I make music, it's dream.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.